Good evening to you. Welcome to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. In tonight's edition of the program, Transport Ministry signals tough measures to curb the wanton destruction of lives on the roads. And it will take more than the leadership of Samia to change the fortunes of the CPP, so say some political analysts. But what does the CPP itself say? So the question is, what does the CPP itself say? My name is Abraham. Our text line for tonight is 026-441-8767. The text line again is 026-441-8767. Transport Minister Collins Dauda is signaling tough measures to find solutions to the wanton destruction of lives on the roads. The ministry today convened a meeting of major players in the road sector to probably halt the spirit of carnage, particularly on the roads. The use of mobile phones by drivers whilst behind the wheels also came up for discussion. But is the ministry now talking tough because of that singular road rage which claimed more than 22 lives in the Ashanti region last week? Minister of Transport Collins Dauda has joined us now on the line. Good evening to you, Mr. Dauda. Good evening, Mr. Dauda. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Good. So what occasioned this meeting today?
Yeah, as you rightly said, we have
been... Mr. Dauda, I'm sorry, your line, it doesn't sound quite clear. If you could reposition yourself or maybe raise your voice a bit for us, I'll be grateful.
Yeah, I'm saying that it's available indicates that between January and June this year, we have lost as many as 1,081 lives as a result of reckless and irresponsible driving on our road. Just recently at Konongo, we lost about 21 lives and at Dawa about 6. All happening around the same time. And we thought that our drivers must be responsible for now being very cautious on the road. As you would appreciate, this the exercise to minimize carnage on our road cannot be one person's or one issue's responsibility. So today I called all the stakeholders, or the major stakeholders, that is the DVLA, the National Road Safety Commission, the DPRTU, the POSWA, Ghana Road Transport Coordinating Committee or Council, and then also the truck associations and the other come together with a view of examining carnage on our roads and find an effective way of dealing with it. We also got on board the MTTU and also the Ghana Civil Aviation, so that I think we share the experience of the civil aviation. You realize that this year's transport system is the air transport system. Yes, it is the safest transport system we have in the world. We thought that sharing experience with them and how they go about theirs would impact positively on our drive to ensure reduction in the carnage of our roads. So that's why we met today. And
I'll be glad if you could share the experience of the aviation officials with that. But before we go to that, does your ministry have any preventive measures or proactive measures to make sure that the accidents do not occur in the first place before we start calling meetings?
About the ministry having proactive measures, you would notice that most of the accidents occur as a result of human error. And you know, you cannot have any catch and dry way of dealing with problems occurring as a result of human error. You just have to educate people, you just have to sensitize, you have to caution. Where you have to punish, you punish to serve as a deterrent to others. That's about it.
So what lessons can we draw from the aviation industry, you know, for road transport, for instance?
Now, in the aviation, for instance, they have a checklist of safety issues that they look at before the aircraft leaves. And we do not have that in the road transport sector. In the road transport sector, if a car is born at the lorry park, if there is a defect on the headlight, if the windscreen is cracked to the extent that maybe the driver cannot, it's very clear. The driver is allowed to go. And we thought that we can apply this same measure as the lorry park.
So whose fault is that? Is it the police or the transport unions?
The transport unions, the police, and everybody, including the driver, the passenger who is sitting in the car. Because some of the times you find a driver driving recklessly, a bold or courageous passenger would caution the driver, and the other passenger would descend on heavily on the passenger who has the courage to even caution the driver. And so we need to kind of sensitize everybody, carry the message across effectively to everybody who has something to do with it, or everybody who is a stakeholder, so that we all come together and reduce this standing. If we cannot put it at the doorstep of one person or one agent or one unit, we must all together try and resolve this matter.
How about drivers who do not belong to any transport union?
Yes, we recognize that. And so the law that we are going to put before Parliament will compel every road user to belong to an association or a union, so that we can hold them responsible. We are not going to have drivers who decide not to join any union anymore as soon as the law is passed by Parliament. You must by force join a union.
But we have private car owners, drivers who definitely do not belong.
We are talking about commercial vehicles.
But it's not only commercial vehicles which are involved in accidents.
But the commercial vehicles are the ones that involve in most accidents and claim more lives. They carry more persons, and therefore, when they are involved in accidents, more lives are claimed.
I agree with you, but even one life from a privately owned vehicle is also too expensive to lose.
I'm not disputing it, but I'm saying that if you look at it from accident or caring with regards to the buses and the commercial vehicles, they far exceed those private ones. So as a matter of reducing it, we are beginning with the commercial vehicles. We are saying that all commercial vehicles are necessarily belong to union, so we can monitor the activities.
So after this meeting, did you arrive at any definite solution to the carnage on our roads?
We are going to mobilize a lot of vehicles, and we are getting that cooperation or collaboration from the private road transport union to get more vehicles for a police patrol on our highway. Because of resource constraints, the MTTU officers are not able to effectively carry out their police patrol on a highway, and we think that the presence of the police on a highway is sufficient check for reckless driving on a highway. So we have asked the private road transport union to collaborate with us by mobilizing vehicles to support the police to be able to show their presence heavily on our road. Besides that, we are going to move from one lorry park to the other terminal, one terminal to the other, carry out sensitization. We are talking about drivers. If you hold a meeting outside the lorry park, the drivers may not attend. For instance, today's meeting, we had leadership of the union who attended, but they are not the ones driving the vehicle. So we now want to carry the message to where we can get the drivers and the passengers. So we are going to the lorry park to carry out sensitization at the lorry park, so that everybody will be careful on the road.
And how about, I'm sorry sir, please go ahead.
Besides this, we are also going to institute or establish units at the lorry parks that would ensure that we'll have these measures complied with at the lorry park, and that's under the leadership of the lorry park managers. We have people who are there as managers of the lorry park who would ensure that before a car moves, they would have certified that the tires are in good shape, headlights are in good shape, the driving mirror is all right, everything, the vehicle is okay for the driver to move the vehicle. So we are trying to apply the safety measures that are applied at the aviation subsector to the road transport subsector. We propose that next week we'll commission the first one at the new plant station, and then we'll carry it out to the other places.
Have you considered car owners who have daily sales for their drivers? You know, and sometimes the drivers will have to make these sales and they rush on the road so they can meet the targets. How about that?
Sale of car owners?
Yes, car owners.
We our interest is to ensure minimization of carnage on our road. If a car owner puts premium on the revenue he will generate, as against safety, That is one bit. But very soon, we are going to deal with the car owners who neglect to ensure that their vehicles are in good shape, because Section 80 of the Road Traffic Act says that any person who puts his vehicle on the road without ensuring that the road is the vehicle is roadworthy and as a result creates any injury to any person is liable to an offense.
Have we identified?
We're going to effectively implement this provision. Also implement the provision that also says that anybody who leaves his vehicle on the highway that obstructs the use of the highway also commits an offense.
But the heavy trucks on the road cannot be easily towed away or pushed aside.
We are saying that if you have your vehicle broken on the highway, you have a duty to remove the vehicle on the highway. You have a duty. Otherwise, you'll be caught under the law. You'll be prosecuted.
But then we can also provide, maybe the assemblies can provide towing machines so that these drivers can hire to tow away their vehicles whenever they break down.
We are talking to some private investors who have come with proposals. Very soon, we'll launch some of these projects on our highways. We are not only going to tow, but we'll provide spaces on the highways where when they are towed, they will be parked. And we are also going to impose some fines, not necessarily fines, but fees on vehicle users, so that as soon as these disabled vehicles are removed from the highway, payment of that is paid from that fund. We are not going to wait for the person whose vehicle is broken down to pay for it. We are going to take some small fee from every vehicle user to build a fund out of which payments of the removal of these disabled vehicles will be paid.
And when is that going to start?
I don't want to give any timeline, but very soon.
Are we considering roads which have been badly engineered and sometimes contribute to the accidents we record on the highways?
I believe that you are extending this debate to cover the whole spectrum of road accidents, road designs, and road engineering. And I don't think that we'll be able to...
Because all these contribute to the accidents we record. It may not only be human error.
I agree, but we are looking at immediately what we can do to minimize the damage. As for these ones, you clearly appreciate that we cannot do it in the short term.
But even an engineer works on a road that is badly done. That engineer should be held responsible.
I agree with you.
And we have quite a number of such roads in the country, and the engineers and the contractors have been let off the hook.
My brother, if we want to go that way, we may have to have a discourse of this particular subject, bringing the engineers and all the people who matter for us to discuss holistically what is involved here. And I don't want to believe that we can exhaust this subject.
But it is important to stop the carnage, so I believe that we need to include it.
I'm not dismissing it. I take note of it. But immediately we are looking at what we can do to minimize it. As for the ones that involve long-term measures and others, we can look at it.
At today's meeting, did you consider both disasters on the water lake?
We did road transport services or road transport sector. We are talking about road accidents or road crashes.
But following the boat disaster about a couple of weeks ago, have we found any solution to that problem also?
My brother, we can't find solutions to this. These are human. You can't find an immediate solution. You can only sensitize, you can only talk to people to stop overloading, which is usually the cause of these boat disasters. But it takes time for people to change their attitude. We haven't given up on it. We'll continue with the education and sensitization. We hope that one day we'll get there. And also try to phase out the wooden boat and then maybe replace them with fiberglass boat.
Dada, it's wonderful having you tonight on Radio Ghana. Have a good night, sir.
You're welcome.
Collins Dauda is the Minister of Transport. You're listening to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. ACP Angubutuge Awuni is the commander of the MTTU. He was also at today's meeting. He's joined us now on the line. Good evening to you, Mr. Awuni.
Good evening, my brother.
How do you think today's meeting would help to stop or maybe minimize the kind of crime that we are recording in our highways?
Yeah, I believe that it was a very good initiative. All the stakeholders were on board, and we had to discuss what each and every one of us have to do, including even passengers. We have the Passengers Association members on board. So if everybody, you know, the accidents are affecting each and every person of us in this country. In fact, the minister even mentioned how his own driver got his sister killed in a recent accident in Kumasi. So one cannot say that you are not part of it. Everybody is part. And therefore, all the stakeholders who came contributed and took something from the meeting this morning.
Did the meeting somehow inform you about how to vary your tactics a bit on the roads? I mean, the police.
Yes. In fact, you cannot talk about road safety without enforcement. So if enforcement is taken out of road safety, the whole road safety campaign will collapse. And so we, as it were, look for, you know, improved means of ensuring that we enforce the what we have to enforce, given the necessary inputs that we need to enforce the rules.
Are you talking about, are you also considering enforcement, you know, at the doorsteps of the unions, the unions which allow the vehicles to leave their stations, sometimes they're not roadworthy, they have worn out tires, and yet they're allowed to load and set off?
Already we have started even talking with the unions at the lorry parks. I think the GPRTU can bear us out that the National Road Safety Commission and the police jointly moved around to educate members of the unions. I think we did one at the Odona lorry park sometime early this year, and we did one to around the Rollins Park taxi rank there. We spoke a lot about it. So we are moving together with other stakeholders to see whether we can educate them at their doormouth. I think it's good for them to begin to inspect these things before they leave the lorry park.
But are we suffering from a lack of enforcement of the laws?
To us, we are doing what we can, given the circumstances that we are in now.
When you say what you can you maybe expand that a bit?
Yes, we need, I said it this morning that we need certain tools, and without the tools, we will be found wanting, because as we speak now, there are certain basic tools that we do not have, and this is what I complained of this morning, that if we want to see the police very effective, especially the MTU, then these tools must be supplied.
So what kind of tools are you talking about, Mr. Awuni?
Something like speed guns to check over speeding. We don't have them. And
those you have, are they working?
Common ARCO meters, we don't have them, you know. And this morning, the minister even appealed to the GPRTU, because the GPRTU is bringing in some ARCO meters to start some of these things. So we appealed to them whether they can assist us with some of these things to make us be effective.
So even though we can blame maybe the lack of enforcement on the lack of equipment, you would not be surprised if people blame the police for non-enforcement of the laws.
No. What can you expatiate on that? What do you mean by the non-enforcement of laws?
Because you do not have the equipment, you are not able to enforce the laws to the letter. Is that a case?
That's exactly what I'm saying. That you need to enforce the law, but you need certain things to enforce the law. If you don't have them, I don't think that you can be very effective. You will do something, but you may not be very effective.
But I'm sure that if a policeman meets a driver, you know, a vehicle with worn-out tires, he doesn't need any kind of tool to stop the driver from proceeding on the journey.
It is not only the tie that is the matter involving traffic enforcement.
But
even the ties, there are tools that are supposed to be used to give the tires so that the treads are worn out or not. There are some that you can just see by the mere view, or by naked eye can see that these things are bad. But there are certain types that you need an instrument to check them before you can realize that they are bad or they are good.
So then, Maybe a bit before I let you go, just a short one from you. What do you think passengers and indeed all Ghanaians should expect on our roads now that we are approaching Christmas, especially from the police?
I think we agreed this morning that we have to intensify, you know, our operations, especially the educational aspect of it. We would have to be visiting the lorry parks. In fact, the minister mentioned that immediately after this morning's meeting, he has put in some committee to, organize such meetings. We have to visit the lorry parks. We have to probably call them, call some of these drivers from the local unions into the classroom. I think earlier part of the year, when the president expressed concern about the rate of accidents, some of these measures were taken, and we're able to bring down the rate of the accidents. So I think if we can go back and do all those things, we may be, you know, trying to save more lives during the coming Christmas. But we also say that the passengers themselves have a responsibility because they sit in the vehicle. You don't see policemen being on the vehicles that travel. Passengers sit in the vehicles, and when they see that the drivers are not doing or the drivers are driving the way that is likely to cause their lives, they have a responsibility to call the drivers to order. In this country, if one passenger calls a driver to order, before you are aware, all other passengers have jumped and are attacking the one who is making the complaint. And we think that that must stop. If a driver is misbehaving, any passenger, this country have laws that allow individuals to even effect arrest. I think Section 12 of the Criminal Procedure Act gives us a room for individual citizens of this country to effect arrest when offenses are committed in their presence. And we must be able to let the Ghanaian know of all these things. Apparently, we are ignorant of these things, and that is why we are not having.
Yeah, you just made reference to the fact that the president makes some complaints. You began doing something, and you had to stop. Why did you stop?
Oh, I think we didn't stop. Probably it lags because we don't have some of these things that we are talking about. But we didn't stop. As we talk now, we still go out there and investigate members of the public. You see, the system is saying that. I think that we are in discipline. This country, we are in discipline. No matter what, I don't see what the National Road Safety Commission have not done. We have education has gone on. We talk to them. The police have gone on the stations to talk to them. We have been on the roads to enforce the some of these rules. Yet people think that they can do whatever they want. I think that there's general indiscipline in the system that all of us must have put our shoulders to the wheel.
Before I let you go, ACP Aruni, let me just read the text message to you. Maybe you'd be interested in responding to it. The text message says, until our MTTU learns to check tires, lights, etc., and also any vehicle, should have two drivers, he's suggesting that, than checking only papers, we can't get anywhere. What do you make of that?
Yes, you see, if you recall, I think I made a suggestion some time ago that the buses that go on long distance journeys, for example, those that run beyond 4 hours should have two drivers. I made this comment some time ago, so that at a point where one gets tired, the other can take over. But like this morning came out, even the transport operators themselves do not see the need to employ some of these measures. And we believe that if they listen to us and go, I mean, according to what we ask them to go, I believe that we'll be saving a lot of lives. The MTTU personnel, and for that matter, even the police, their laws are that we should check those vehicles to see, the documents to see that they are roadworthy, whether the driver is properly licensed, his license is not expired, is not using a license A to drive a machine that is supposed to be driven by a license A holder, a B holder. Mm-hmm. All these things must be checked. And therefore, the police will be doing its job when they check them. But that does not in itself stop accidents. There are other things that we must do.
ACP.
Not only even the police service alone, like I'm saying, all of us will have to put our hands on it.
Yes, indeed. And we thank you very much for talking to us tonight. We'll keep talking to you and to the police as we approach Christmas. Thank you very much, ACP Aruni.
You're welcome.
Commander of the police MTT, where earlier we hinted on the possibility of our roads being a cause of the accidents we've been recording. We now have joining us engineer Magnus Lincoln Kwashi. He's a specialist on road construction and safety. Good evening to you, Mr. Kwashi.
Good evening.
So can the nature of the roads cause accidents?
Certainly. You see, once you talk about accidents, the road is a major component. Of course, the vehicle is there, and then the user. So if roads are if our roads are not maintained, if they are poorly designed, they have the propensity of causing accidents.
Can you give us a practical or a vivid picture of a bad road engineered that can cause accidents? Is it one that has too many sharp curves? How should it? How do they look like?
Well, I mean, let me even talk about the function of the pavement itself. I mean, common potholes can cause accidents because if a driver decides to swerve, I mean, a pothole is likely, maybe unconsciously, to get into the lane of an oncoming vehicle, and that alone can cause accidents. Now, the curves we design in terms of horizontal curves, in terms of the vertical curves, if these are not properly designed, because we have specifications, if they are not properly done, they can cause accidents. But assuming they are done well, what usually happens is that the surface defect of the pavement, you know, can create incidents for accidents, actually.
So can we have a smooth road which is still not properly done that can cause accidents? The surface is smooth, no potholes yet, is dangerous for driving?
Yes, you can have a smooth road, very well done, nice asphalt, but if we have what we call sight distance. Now, sight distance is the length of road a driver or a motorist is in front of him when he's approaching. Now, so if sight distances are not designed properly, even though you have a very good road design, cause accidents. Now, the other thing too is that posted speeds, roads are designed with certain limits. So if a user, so in this case, let's say the road is done properly, everything very well done. If a driver decides to do exceed necessarily above the limit of the posted limit, what can happen then is that that driver puts himself and other users at risk. The other thing is that you have designations where you are not supposed to overtake. You have designations where you're not supposed to do certain maneuvers. If a user decides to do this, you know, consciously or unconsciously, he then puts himself or other users also at risk.
So that one can be blamed on human error, but specifically talking about the nature of the roads, do you have so many badly engineered roads in Ghana which cause accidents?
You see, presently, I mean, of course, you have certain, I mean, roads, you know, maybe I can't mention immediately. We need to also look at the
check. I'd be great if you could give us just a couple of examples.
Well, now I can talk about roads with, if you take the motorway now, the curvatures are good. The serious problem is the pavement. So as I speak now, there are some serious holes on the motorway. And sometimes people are doing 100 kilometers, 120. They see this and then they immediately swerve. You know, so this is the place where you have a functional defect, you know, of the pavement, which can cause an accident. You know, so this is a typical one. Now, today, in transportation engineering, we have what we call forgiven rules, which means that if you take the motorway again, most of the accidents that occur on the motorway are what we call single accidents. So if we talk about forgiven rules, it means that when we engineer the road, we need to put in the necessary infrastructure. You know, just in case even a driver is sleeping or something, the engineering should be up to speed such that we can prevent it. So in other jurisdictions, you will find that, for example, in the median of the motorway, we will have what we call crash barrier all along because there is a ditch in the median, which is about 1.2 meters. And our design tells us that once you have a minimum of 1.2, it means that when a vehicle side enters, it cannot move. So ideally, today, as I speak now, we should have had a crash barrier all along from beginning to end of motorway so that drivers who veer off don't suffer the fatality or casualty they do today. You know, so this is also a typical example what you do with...
But is it going to cost us too much to do such a thing like this?
Pardon me?
Is it going to cost us too much, you know, to do such a thing like you're saying on the motorway?
Well, you see, sometimes when we look at cost in terms of putting things, it looks so huge. But ask yourself, the cost
of life.
Life. You see, over here in Ghana, probably we don't have the details. But if you go to, for example, the Netherlands, they did an economic analysis of accidents, and they are able to estimate that a Dutch person costs about €500,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's exactly. So you can imagine in a year, if we have 2,000 people dying in Ghana, even at the cost of 5,000 euro per person. So that for that person, you look at what goes into his family, if he was alive, what he would have done for his family. So it's we need to, even though they look at what they look like external factors, very difficult to estimate, we need to put premium on the human life. If you, after all, what is the cost of crash barrier? When we have a human life, that will contribute human resource, you know, to various sectors of this economy.
But looking at the way we're trying to address the issue of road accidents, do you think we are looking at the nature of the roads as an important aspect of preventing road accidents?
Well, you see, I don't think that we as a country have given it the attention we need to give. Honestly, I mean, in my opinion, you see, it's not just those bits and pieces we try to do. There are a series of things we need to put in place immediately to address the issue. You know, I have said over time, for example, that at the beginning of the year, what the National Road Safety does is that they have data to see, to show us who is to do what. Now, they need to publish this series, you know, just like EPA did on the Akokoben thing today. The middle of the year, they need to publish it so that we know which agency is to do what. You see, so people must be on the spot to deal with issues. If somebody is supposed to fix a pothole, if somebody is supposed to fix this, and he doesn't, and there's an accident, it's a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but people are there, you go and ask this person, he says he hasn't got money. Now, who hasn't given him money to fix it? I'm sorry to say, see, we have money to do all sorts of things. But when it comes to looking at our own self, we are not hospitable to our own self, but we can do things for other people. We are doing basic things that will keep the Ghanaian alive all year round. You see, so in terms of the road, I think that one way to do it, you see, is to put this in the public so that people like you, the press, can go to specific agencies and ask, why have you done this? Because it is going to cause an accident. He will also tell you, fine, I have not been given money. Then you find out who hasn't given me money to fix this. Then he also tells us why, you know, then we get to the bottom of the matter. Then everybody is just there, you know, whether if you bring money, we'll do it. Whether and people are dying, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. But I believe that together with my colleague engineers and all professionals in this country, I think that we have received the training and whatever it takes to use our skills and knowledge to improve the quality of life of ordinary Ghanaians and everybody as a person.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much for talking to us tonight, Mr. Magnus Lincoln Kwashi. Have a good night. Engineer Kwashi is a specialist on road construction and safety. You're listening to Behind the News, and this program is live on Radio Ghana. Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana and Accra and at gbcghana.com. Here are some of your text messages. Commercial drivers should stop careless overtaking and speeding and take their passengers to their destinations alive. Andrew Manga in Boku sent us that. Until MTTU learned to check tires, well, I've done this one already. Abraham, my heart bleeds at the speed of carnage on our roads. At least 6 lives are lost daily. What measures has the government put in place to curb the carnage on our roads? Iliasu in Tamale sent us that. Well, the intervention by the minister should be embraced by all to save lives. Dauda in King Tampo sent this one. Dr. Nkrumah is an exceptional leader and was a visionary president who deserves to be eulogized and remembered all the time. Al Hassan Isahak Malik sent us that from Apoli. Ayel Gasa Cletus and Borga says any driver caught talking on the phone should be arrested and fined in addition for the law to take its course. And Sham Yendi says the road ministry should stop the sweet talks. That is better Ghana for you. You're listening to Behind the News, and it's live on Radio Ghana. Since the the reintroduction of multi-party democracy in 1992, the Convention People's Party, CPP, has been playing second fiddle to the New Patriotic Party and the National Democratic Congress. From the representation of three members in Parliament in 2004, CPP has seen its fortunes dwindle to only a member of Parliament in the last general election. The party seems to be reinvigorated with the election of the daughter of Dr. Nkrumah, Samia, as the chairman of the party. However, the younger son of Dr. Nkrumah, Sekou Nkrumah, says it takes more than the election of his sister as a leader of CPP and Nkrumah's name for the party to rediscover itself. The party needs to reposition itself to be able to attract more electorates in the next election. Dr. Nkrumah has joined us now on the line. Good morning to you, Dr. Sekou Nkrumah.
Yeah, good morning to you and good evening.
Well, the CPP has been in the news of late, I'm sure, for good reasons. Of course, they had a very smooth election, elected your sister as a chairperson, and yesterday was Founders Day. The founder of the party, the founder of the nation, was celebrated yesterday. Do you not think that the CPP is on, or do you think the CPP is on some kind of a resurgence path?
I'm not sure. I think... talking to a few people, I wouldn't say everyone, but it looks like a few people in Ghana today seem to want a third force to emerge, and some seem to point to the CPP as that third force that could emerge. I am not very sure about that. I'm not even sure that whether Ghana needs a third force, and if Ghana is to have a third force, then I think that third force will have to emerge on its own.
But why aren't you sure? I'm sorry, Dr. Nkrumah. Some have said that yes. Both the NPP and NDC are the same in terms of policies and all that, where the CPP could
be. No, they are not. They come from different ideologies, and I don't think they represent the same.
But in implementing their plans, different ideologies, but in implementing their plans, some say there's no much difference, and that the CPP could be a better alternative.
Yes, but that is my point. They quite built a foundation, not only for the CPP. The CPP was just a vehicle that he used, but he built a foundation for this country. But those who want to continue to champion his vision, his ideals and his ideas, I think need to build on that. So they need to present Ghanaians with a new agenda, a new vision. That is not to take away from his contribution, but to add to it. And I think that is what is lacking. I don't see the substance in the CPP of today. And I think that is what I'm saying. If the third force is to emerge, then that force, will emerge on its own based on the dynamics of the day and the situation in Ghana, and see how they can do 10 things around. I think when Nkrumah formed the CPP, I mean, nobody really knew about the CPP or where it was coming from, but it was more to do with what he represented, and it was just the vehicle that he used. So I think traditions are okay, a good thing, but I think we need sometimes to move beyond traditions, because even the present day where we have the two blocks, NPP and NDC, I think there are a few of us who are now concerned that it looks like we are changing governments, all right, but we don't really see any improvement in the lives of the people. We don't see any real improvement in the infrastructure and so on.
And that is why we may need a reinvigorated CPP.
It doesn't have to be a CPP, because the CPP also belongs to a different era. It was born out of a different struggle. That's the struggle for independence.
So you think that the CPP...
We are in a different era today.
You think that the CPP is outdated now? We don't need it?
No, what I'm saying is that the CPP or any new force to emerge will have to emerge based on the issues at stake today.
But can't the CPP get revived?
The emphasis is too much on Nkrumah and what Nkrumah did.
Why not? His ideas are dated. Nkrumah's ideas
no,
about
not
getting...
So, but you have to build on them. You have to repackage them. Nkrumah belongs to an entirely different era. And you cannot just take Nkrumah's ideas and revive them immediately. You need to understand the dynamics. You need to understand the world today and how to fit those ideas into today's idea. That's why you need a new kind of leadership. And it doesn't have to come from a CPP tradition. It's a question of Ghana. I think there were different traditions that have contributed to the development of this country. I'm saying we don't have to continue living in the past. We learn from the past, but we have to move forward at some point. And I'm saying I would rather be more interested in a third force that represents the needs and interests of Ghanaian today. A third force that will represent and address the real issues. A third force that will have substance and people of substance, not people who want to ride on other people's backs, or people who want to market a person who is no longer with us, or a person who had made his contribution immense and great as it was, but is no longer with us. So we need new leaders. We need to embrace new ideas as well. I'm not saying we should throw the old ideas, especially the good ones among them. And I think Nkrumah's vision still lives on. But I'm saying you need new leaders who understand today's world, the modern world. Nkrumah lived 40, 50 years ago. I think it has to be, his ideas have to be repackaged. And that's where I don't see substance in people who say they're Nkrumahists or people who believe in his ideology, because they are still living in the past. They are unable to break free from the past and represent the present. And then think that runs to other political parties or traditions as well. And I think that's why as a whole we seem to be stuck as a people. And I think we need a true visionary person who represents this present age.
But do you not think that a sister can do this? You don't think your sister, as the leader of the CPP, can repackage the ideas of the father?
In many ways, Chame was voted as leader of the CPP because of being in Kuma. But so it's up for her now to prove whether she is capable of reviving the party. But I'm saying Samia doesn't really have much experience in Ghanaian politics or politics in general. I don't think she has done anything to convince me that she has the capability to turn things around. But for the benefit of the doubt, I mean, I think she's now in the leadership position of the CPP. So it's for her to now try to revive the party. Let's see if that's possible. But some of us have said that the emergence of the NDC over the years has suppressed any development of the CPP. So either the two parties find a way of working together, or one will be strong and one will be weak. And for some time now, the NDC is very much stronger.
Hello, Dr. Nkrumah. I'm afraid we seem to have lost Dr. Sekou Nkrumah, son of the late Kwame Nkrumah, founder of Ghana. Now let's go to the full lines again and speak to Mr. Kwame Jantua, who is a leading member of the CPP. Good evening, Mr. Jantua. Welcome to Behind the News. Do you think the CPP needs to repackage the ideas of Nkrumah in order to experience a resurgence?
Well, I believe that Nkrumah's ideals still apply today. The circumstances of which those ideals were born out in the early 50s and 60s are totally different from the circumstances we have today. But they apply to today. You know, so far as you have people having to go out onto the beaches to go to toilet, it is relevant. So far as you have children not in school, is relevant. So far as you have people sleeping outside in front of shops, it's relevant. So far as people can't afford 3 square meals a day, it's relevant. So, yes, it has to be repackaged to suit today's circumstances.
How should that be done?
Well, in terms of, I believe in the CPP, and I believe the CPP is the vehicle that can do that. We take the circumstances that we live in, and take the, for instance, take the development plans that he did and see where you can probably adjust it to reflect the needs of society today, because it applies today. I mean, if other countries, Malaysia, Singapore, they came, they looked at what Ghana was doing at the time and used it to build their country, why can't we do that today?
Are we sure that's what happened?
Well, of course. Look, Ghana, at the time of the resurgence of our manufacturing industries, we were one of the countries growing a lot of palm. The Malaysians came here, and what did they do? They looked at what we were doing, and they took the palm plant that we had, and they sent it to their country. And Malaysia is one of the major suppliers of palm kernels today. You see, so I believe it applies. I believe everything Nkrumah did, he did systematically with strategy. He didn't do things just for the sake of doing it. And I believe if we follow that kind of strategy, yes, we would survive. I mean,
do you need we need to, Mr. Jantua?
Look at the way he set up, you know, the shoe factory in Kumasi. The Fulanis were bringing cattle into Ghana. He then bought 50% of that cattle. He then used the beef from the cattle to go to send to the Kombi factory in Bolga. He used the hide to go to send to Kumasi for shoes. He used the hoofs and the horns for glue for the factory. Everything he did was strategic. The jute factory, for instance, the Western region in Ashanti were cocoa hubs, so he set up a jute factory there. Asuchari, they had a lot of sugar cane. He set up a sugar factory there. So, you know, the things he did were strategic. And I believe that if we were to follow that plan, we would be able to, you know, move his ideas forward. I'm not saying we should be stuck in it. I'm saying we should try as much as possible to bring it to today's Ghana.
Do we have to practically go for the 7-year development plan, for instance, and apply it? Can't we now draw our own plan that's relevant to current trends and apply it? Do we need Nkrumah's plan?
I would say we wouldn't need Nkrumah's plan. But with the past governments we've had after Nkrumah, what plans have worked in this country? What plans have worked? Do we have factories today? Look at our education system today. Look at our housing system today. Water, electricity. So these governments that had ruled after Nkrumah, could we really say that they were following any plan for the development of this country? When a government comes in and decides to sell a majority of the industries that we had, yes, there were some industries that weren't performing. But don't you think we could have revamped some of these industries? And today, we import second-hand tires in this country. Well, we had a tire factory in the Western region. Isn't it something we could have revamped to produce our own tires? Well, we have nearly 18 of rubber. Couldn't we do that?
But do you think that by continually, you know, trumpeting the ideas of Nkrumah, the CPP can ever experience a resurgence?
It's not a question of trumpeting the ideas of Nkrumah. It's a question of trumpeting those things that worked. Those things that worked. And when I say trumpeting, I don't mean standing on top of a hill and shouting, he did this or did that. But seeing how we can apply it for the benefit of Ghanaians. Do you think if Nkrumah were living today, the way our gold industry has gone, it would have gone that way?
What would he have done differently?
Well, he started a refinery, didn't he? He started a gold refinery. When the coal came, it was truncated. Wouldn't we be also enjoying the $1,900 an ounce that gold is fetching today? Wouldn't we? Tell me today, in this country, and I'll use gold again, do we have any indigenous gold mining company that is run by Ghanaians? Do we have it? We don't.
Are you calling for indigenization of our industries and all that?
I'm not calling for indigenization of our industries. What I'm calling for is that the resources of this country should benefit Ghanaians first, before it benefits any other person.
Was that a vision of Nkrumah?
Of course. Nkrumah was interested in the benefit of Ghanaians, that what we had would benefit us first before it benefited any other person. And it's just logic that it should be so. When you go to other countries, these Western countries we tend to compare ourselves to, their resources, who does it benefit first? It benefits their citizens. So why should it be different in Ghana?
I'll come back to you just so don't briefly. So, Dr. Nkrumah, many have talked about the selflessness of Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. Is that not a virtue that we should aspire today to for our leaders?
No, I think, you see, I would rather say I believe in Ghana, not the CDP. I believe the Ghanaians can do it. Nkrumah was a Ghanaian. He showed us how it can be done. But let's leave what Nkrumah did. Let's stop talking about what Nkrumah did and talk about what we can do. This new generation can do.
Can we stop talking about Nkrumah and what it did for as long as the problems that existed in his time?
No, I think it's not because as long as, it's because we have not done much since Nkrumah. That's why Nkrumah still, we are still talking about Nkrumah, because if we had done much, then we would have probably by now forgotten about Nkrumah.
Or
So part of the problem is that we are unable to move forward, and that is why we always have to refer to the past.
We can also say maybe we fail to continue what he began.
We can, but it cannot be in yesterday. It's 50 years down the line. So obviously the approach and methods will have to change and be different. The struggles are different. I'm saying we can learn from what and be guided by his vision. But I'm saying we have the approach. We'll have to change a bit. We have to repackage a lot of the things. And that is what seems to be lacking in the substance. We see our leaders of today are lacking in substance. And that's what I'm saying. I don't want to focus on the platform, but rather on what they are saying. So what your platform or the vehicle you are using is irrelevant for me. What is important is how the blueprint you have, your program. And when you are empowered, then we have to measure you by that program. You don't just throw manifestos at Ghanaians, and then when you are there, then you find all sort of excuses. That means even those manifestos were properly prepared or planned. I think we need now people of quality and substance, and I think it is enough. We've had enough. I mean, enough is enough. We are passing time. We are not making much progress, always dependent on World Bank, IMF. Yes, I agree. We have to do things. Our resources should be used for our benefit. We have to see a lot of that. We are not seeing it. But the point is that there's a way you can do it. And it's a way that you can also inspire people to also help you with that. Nkrumah was not alone. He had great people around him to help him. Whether those great people were Ghanaians or foreigners, George Papo, I can mention as one. He was a top intellectual of his time. He was an African black man, yes, but he was a top intellectual, internationally recognized. Those are the people that we need. Our leaders, they need to work also with people who are at a high level, because they have that understanding and the know-how. And then if all of us then can come on board, then I'm sure Ghana can move forward and we'll all be proud of being Ghanaians. We'll all be proud and enjoy the wealth of Ghana.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nkrumah, for being with us tonight on Radio Ghana, and have a good night. Dr. Sekou Nkrumah is the youngest son of Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. Now back to you, Mr. Jansua. Are you with me?
I'm still here, yes.
Yes, indeed. So the CPP as a party,
yes.
How can it get itself back to the position it used to be? Is it possible?
You see, we in the CPP today, and with the new executive that has been voted in, we do realize the enormity of the job that we have to do. However, we have the determination to do it. We have the sacrifices. We're prepared to sacrifice to do it. We are committed fully to do it. And we want to show that everybody needs to come on board. It would not take just one name to do it. And in fact, we want to put the names aside. The names don't matter. It is whether we are prepared to put our elbows to the wheel and take this party up from the grassroots. Get our people to understand what it means to build a party. What it means to have a party that Ghanaians would want to say it is worth putting our vote towards this party. And we know we can do it. You know, at the present moment, there is a perceived factionalism in the party.
Is it perceived or real?
Well, let's face facts. You know, I mean, I don't mince my words. There's a perceived Indum faction. There's perceived Akosa faction. There's a perceived Agude faction. Now,
but that is common in all political parties. All political parties have leaders who have some kind of following.
Yes, but then it hasn't helped us. It could be in other political parties. I'm talking about the CPP. It hasn't helped us. And the only way we can make sure that we get the benefit of everybody is to hand an olive branch to everybody. Please come on board. Please come help build this party. Irrespective of who you are, what you are, if you believe in the party, if you feel that the party is supreme above every other person, we want everybody to come on board. And let's start building the party from the grassroots up. Yes, you might have a flourishing top, but if the foundation is weak, then we aren't going anywhere.
We thank you very much, Mr. Jansua.
We need to build it from the bottom up.
We thank you very much, Mr. Jansua, for this wonderful contribution to the program tonight. Have a good night.
Thank you very much for calling me.
It's a pleasure. Kwame Jansua is a leading member of the CPP. A couple of text messages. The MTTU must focus its attention on tipper tracks, for they are the causes of most fatalities on our routes. Issa in Savalugu says, until Africans found unity among themselves in their individual countries, the continent's unification will remain with Dr. Nkrumah in his grave, Kojoye Kinsinkeko says. And Oga in Borga says, the only thing the MTTU can do better on our routes is checking papers and collecting monies from drivers. May God save us. And that's it for tonight's edition of of Behind the News, which came to you live from Broadcasting House in Accra, on all original FM stations of the GBC and at gbcghana.com. This program is produced by Christopher Sedu, Edmond Tete, Kinsler Bintre, Bayet Agama, John Pobi. Armstrong Abelno is our technical producer for tonight. My name is Abraham Sari. Have a good night.